John, I'm quite interested in this kind of EU legislation that they're trying to push through at the moment on seed varieties, but I don't really understand too much what it's about. Can you explain it to me?
I can try. There is this the Plant Seeds and Varieties Act, various years. Basically, there is a list of permitted varieties. It's called the National List of Permitted Varieties, and every country has one. Not every EU country has one. In this country, it's policed by DEFRA. For every agricultural crop, whether that's tomatoes, cucumbers, wheat, you name it, there are varieties of each of those. And if the name of that variety is not on that list, you're not allowed to commercialize that variety, which means you can't sell the seed, you can't, the seed for growing. This is about growing seed. So you can't give it away. You can't trade it. You can't transfer the genetic ownership, in a sense, to anyone else. So all these old wheats, all these old thatching wheats, I might have a thatcher, a straw grower who wants to grow this stuff for thatching. And if I give it to him, I can get 2 years in jail and a massive fine. I cannot give anyone the seed of my old wheat varieties, no matter how good they are, no matter how tasty they are, healthy or climate proofed or anything, because it's not on the approved list. And the approved list, to get on that, has to go through a lot of really stringent tests. It has to be genetically distinctive, genetically uniform. Well, I've just talked about earlier about how mine are genetically mixed, which you need to be resilient. That's actually considered the worst possible thing in modern legislation. And they have to be genetically stable. Well, I don't want stability. I want instability. I want, because instability means crop adaptation and evolution. So old varieties will never pass the tests. They will be made pure. Hence, what's a heritage variety? Because if you make it pure, is it a heritage variety? Well, that's the only way it can get licensed. So a couple of years ago, they decided finally to bring in something to make it easier for people to have heritage varieties. And they brought in a conservation variety directive. But if you read the small print and the way it's all structured, it's going to make no difference. That was a sop, in a sense, to the alternative sector. Because in fact, what they're doing is tidying up and tightening the legislation to make it easier for GM companies to introduce GM crops, because they want super strict seed laws so that nobody can grow GM crops. Once they introduce their GM varieties, they don't want some farmer growing it without paying them a royalty. So they want very clear, tight legislation. They don't want gray areas. And so far, there's been a gray area. Someone like Henry Doubleday, or the Garden Organic, as they're called now, they have the Heritage Seed Library and they do old varieties. What they're doing is illegal. I was told that very directly by Jack Edgley, who is the head of Plant Seeds and Variety at DEFRA, and I said, why aren't you closing them down? And he said, because the prince is the patron. That's what they told me. Of course, he's helped me as well, so maybe I'm protected there a bit too. So I went to them several years ago and I said, look, you know, this is going to get tighter. It's going to get harder. They're going to bring in GM crops. You know, we have to do something because these heritage varieties are very important. They're the legacy of our ancestors, you know, and you're trading in them now, but I've been told what you're doing is illegal and it's going to get harder. And they said, oh, no, it's a gray area. It's not a big issue. So Sheila Dillon, I told her all about this. They did a program on this about a year and a half, 2 years ago. They interviewed me, and I said just what I said. And I said, you know, it's coming. And they said, oh, no, it's not a big deal. So they put a little tiny bit for me. I can't even remember, a little bit. And they had the spokesperson from Henry Doubleday saying, oh, it's a gray area. It's not a big deal. Well, they know very well it's not a gray area. It's very clear. It's illegal. And they're tightening that legislation. So now it's come up again. They're apparently reviewing all this. But now, of course, they have in place this Conservation Variety Directive, which they say gives you a legal means to grow heritage varieties. In fact, it's super circumscribed and it's not going to be workable. Basically, it's illegal to grow thatching straw is what's happened. Good quality thatching straw is illegal because you can't transfer the seed. So if you lose your crop because of climate change and your neighbor's still growing it and you gave him the seed 10 years before, you can't go back and get your own seed back that you gave him. It's all illegal. And farmers are really scared of this because DEFRA is a really powerful body and they worry about subsidies and all this kind of things. So, you know, it's a really big thing. Basically, they've criminalized growing the crops of your ancestors, which I think is insane. And as I say, it's going to get harder and they're going to tighten the legislation because there's a new move to bring in GM crops. And, you know, the pressure from agribusiness is immense to do that. And most farmers, a lot of the big farmers in this country, are obviously very supportive of it, the NFU and the rest. So these old wheats that I'm growing, you know, if I give them to anyone, well, you know, it seems crazy given a period of such climatic instability that the most stable crops you can grow are the illegal ones. So I just think that's a huge issue. People underestimate. So, for example, if you, you know, on your allotment, all these people on their allotments are growing crops. Well, you can't swap seeds with someone on your allotment. That's illegal. Technically, that's illegal. You can't pass on the crops, you know, your grandmother's magic beans. You know, technically, they can't pass them on to you.
What was the actual point of this legislation? Was it there to protect somebody?
To protect farmers from poor quality seed and from growing inferior crops, because the new varieties that come on the list every year have gone through all these super stringent tests, not just for yield. The yields haven't really increased in a long time, but for disease resistance. You know, it makes sense at the general level when you start talking about it. Of course, you know, I've planted 5 acres and not a single seed germinated. I know how bad that can be. But the thatching straw growers that I know don't want to be protected because they're going to be forced to grow these little short varieties that are no good anyway. So, and they have special characteristics, these old varieties of tomatoes or beans or whatever, you know, not
can
just cereals.
Not register these?
That's what this conservation variety directive supposedly allowed you to do. And they say they're relaxing the legislation to allow you to register them. But then there are restrictions on marketing. The problem is actually about seed cleaning and marketing to EU standards or British standards. So it's not just about paying a few hundred pounds for registering an old variety.
And how many varieties, if you were to go through what you have here with your variety, how many would that mean you registering?
Well, exactly. If you're growing a population with 300 different varieties in it, I'd have to pay, what, 300 times... I think the official registration fee is £275 per variety. It's something along those lines. Normally, it would be literally tens of thousands of pounds to go through all the proper tests, but they've, you know, relaxed that a little bit to allow you just to register it. But you can't register a population because they have to be genetically pure. And they even consider the old varieties need to be genetically pure, or pretty much genetically pure. So I couldn't register a population. And you see, the future is not just about growing a pure heritage variety, one named variety that's genetically very similar. It's about growing a genetic mixture. I think that's the solution, and you can't license those.
I ask you a strange question. Does this sound something to me? It's kind of the plant version of sort of purist breeding in human terms. Do you remember this?
Eugenics.
Yes. Is this the sort of plant version?
It's an obsession with genetic purity. Yes, it's true. Yes. Dr. Strangelove, really, isn't it? Precious bodily fluids and genetic uniformity. I know, it gets very crazy. I think there are many scientists, and I went into plant breeding thinking, you know, I really wanted to produce, you know, create new crops that could feed the starving masses of the world. And they really think they're doing that. And they think that that's what GM crops are, that that's the only way forward. But of course, they're working with blinders, with very, very narrow perspective. Scientists are amongst can be amongst the most narrow people in the universe. You know, there's not enough food. People are starving. The crops are not yielding enough. Therefore, we need GM crops. Like that's literally the logic leap of faith. There's no consideration of all the other issues that pertain to it, or the resources that you need to grow modern varieties more. And you know, they just don't see it that way. It's a very simplistic notion.
In some ways, from what we've talked about today, some of these crops that you are the heritage varieties seem to be much more resilient against the climate when it changes. Deeper root systems, more resistance to sharp weather changes. By doing this GM food sort of restriction, this EU seed cataloguing, if you like, are we possibly causing a future problem for the fact that we won't have crops that will withstand climate change? Are we cutting our nose off to spite our face?
I think that the official kind of agribusiness, DEFRA scientist approach is, okay, we have this genetic diversity, we freeze it in gene banks, and then if, you know, high-level plant breeders want to produce new varieties, they can go and they can pull out these genetic material and then incorporate it into our modern crops. That's their solution to food security. But I would rather see the solution being increasing the amount of UK-grown grain. So bringing on, you know, there are a lot of farms that could grow cereals rather than import it. Of course, it's uneconomic to do that in the present climate in the way that it's being done. And having all the kit you need and you know, all that. So I think the key to food security is, I suppose, to me, to decentralize production, to increase the small-scale production and low input, or, you know, organic is one version of low input, not necessarily the lowest. So grow this in a sustainable way locally for local markets. That's where food security is going to come from. And throw in climate change. Yeah, it's a scary thing. You know, are we really just going to be, you know, the strategic planning for the government is just the grain barons of East Anglia are going to grow all the grain for the country in terms of crisis. There's an oil spike, and, you know, and there's all sorts of interesting government planning about future food crisis, because it gets very tight. You know, we've got another bad season going on. We've had two bad years.
I know, we've had to plant red barley in our area.
It's
because the crops failed literally throughout Northamptonshire.
Well, to me, we have to find a way of decentralizing and localizing the production of cereals and doing it in a more sustainable, you know, less carbon intensive way, and at the same time producing healthier food, really, than the stuff that's imported and, you know, baked the way it is. It's all connected, isn't it, really? I mean, you can't make progress in one without, you know, changing the way we bake and changing our perceptions of what good bread is. And at the same time, we've got to change the type of crops we're growing and how we grow them. We've just gone down such a kind of narrow approach, I think, in the last 50 years. But then the whole goal of government policy was to get farmers off the land. You know, that's been the idea. Make it more efficient, get on your tractor, produce massive quantities. Well, has it really solved all our problems? Not really, you know. So I think we've got to unwind that whole thing. But it was pretty hard, you know, having these views within a science department, like when I was at the University of Reading in plant breeding section. You know, there I am playing with medieval organic crops funded by the Prince of Wales, and everyone else is doing GM crops and laughing at you and thinking, you know, there's nothing at all in this, you know, what a joke, that's not how you're going to feed the world. But they had no perception even of why the world was starving, bizarrely. You know, there's no deep critical analysis of that. It was just a very simplistic approach. What we need is, you know, more chemicals, more higher yield, higher breeding, or more intensive breeding. You know, no GM crop has actually increased yields. They're trying to increase yields in terms of adapting to certain conditions. But you know, we've painted ourselves into a corner, and the only scientific way out is to go the biotechnology route. But they're not looking at it like a systems approach. If you look at it like through history, archaeology, and through a depth of, you know, agriculture was a system change, going from hunting-gathering to farming. And you got to look at it from an ecological perspective and the sustainability of human populations, not just like as a narrow how to make a crop higher yielding. That's a very narrow reductionist approach to those issues. Anyway, just keep going.
Right, that's a really...
I tell you what, why don't you just take these...